Snack Bar Games Podcast. And welcome to a special episode of the Snack Bar Games Podcast, where we discuss the Game of the Year candidates. We have narrowed down the best of the best to six games, and we're going to discuss them here.
And, now.
Now. Whenever that is.
Right now.
Now, though. But, like, it's now. Keep listening. This is when it's going to happen. Right. Or if you pause, I mean, you could hear it in like a week or something, but just keep listening. But yeah, so these are what we have decided as a group are the best games of the year. Which is the best? That's what we're going to decide. All right. So, Andrew, what is our first finalist?
Our first finalist is Batman Arkham City. I don't know what that was, but I'm going to stick with it.
Okay.
Don't you mean Arkham Asylum?
Nope.
Yeah, so first let's talk about what makes this game worthy of being in this list. And
I can
Matt,
start
we'll start
with
you because you love that game, right? That was your favorite.
I don't take part of this. No.
Don't start that again, please.
Fine.
I'm appalled.
Andrew, go ahead.
That there's a game.
Well, the game has Batman. Batman's pretty awesome.
And no, also but seriously. Batman.
Yeah, and also Batman. This is Arkham Asylum, but much better. It has the same amazing combat. The story is pretty interesting for a Batman game. The city is really fun to explore. The gliding mechanic is one of the coolest ways to traverse an open city in any game I've played. And I don't know. All the side content is great. It's a much bigger version of Arkham Asylum, but it still feels really tightly packed, and there isn't a single moment in that game where I was disappointed or let down in any fashion. I just really enjoyed it.
Fair enough. But, I mean, the one issue I think I have with it is I have trouble, you know, giving an award to a game that's so iterative. It does a lot of things well, but does it do things well that Arkham Asylum didn't do well?
I never like that complaint because does a game really need to be that original to be the best of the year? I mean, I get it might not be as memorable as the original in the long run. Like, I think 5 years down the line or maybe even 10 years down the line, I think when people think of, you know, that series, whatever it evolves into at past this point, they're going to think of
Arkham World.
Arkham Asylum. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's totally news, right? I think people were going to remember Arkham Asylum most because that was the first, and nobody expected to be as good as it was. But to be fair, Arkham City is a better version of that, and everything that was great about Arkham Asylum is as great or better here. The boss battles are all much better. I think the connecting story is great. The fact that they have all of these villains in here, but none of them feel like they're there just to be there. They all feel like they play a significant role in this gigantic criminal overworld city place. And I don't know. It all just came together for me by the end. And the Catwoman stuff is pretty cool too, although kind of unnecessary. I guess if there's one complaint. One major complaint I could say is that the Catwoman content wasn't great, but if you buy the game used, you'll never experience it anyway, so it doesn't matter.
You totally buy this one used, is what you said.
Yeah, it's not bad or anything. It's just kind of drags the experience down a little.
Matt, I know you're wanting to say something, but let's have a shorter version of what you want to say here.
I'd just rather abstain from the conversation, honestly. I didn't care for it.
Your main complaint is you think the combat is pretty repetitive and you just couldn't, you know, get into it.
Yeah,
I
don't know if that's my main complaint. No, my main complaint, because I can deal with a game not being super fun as long as I enjoy the story, and I just thought it was written really dumbly. I thought it was dumb. It was written dumb. I didn't like the way it was. Like, I did not believe Paul Dini wrote anything like specific dialogue and stuff, except for the one cutscene with the Joker, which was amazing. I love that cutscene when you first talk to him and Joker reveals his plan, which is an effed up plan, and like chilled me, and I was like, oh god. But then I just thought none of it made any sense. I thought Batman was an idiot in that game. Like, the game is like a what if. It's an Elseworlds where the core of the planet is radioactive and made everyone dumb. And it's, I'm not into that at all. I'd rather just
it made everyone dumb and also Batman.
Yeah.
And also Batman.
A complete idiot. And Batman's like, hey, I keep finding new gadgets. Well, you're Batman. Why didn't you just have all that stuff when you got there and just all that stuff? And I wasn't into it.
Yep. To avoid prolonging or creating another Batman-related argument, I'm just going to say I disagree.
All right. Anybody have anything else to say in favor or in opposition to Batman?
Nope.
All right.
It has Batman.
What's next? It does. What's the next game?
The next game is The Elder Scrolls, or rather, I'm just going to ignore but Elder Scrolls V Skyrim.
Yes. So, Skyrim, pretty good, right?
Yeah.
It was all right.
I think we kind of talked it to death over the last couple months here. But I guess
I just want to say something real quick. I think every Bethesda game, just generally speaking, in terms of their world and their characters and just how they cram so much information and character and like story into this massive, large environment that you can explore and go and do whatever you want. Out of all of their games that they've done that, I think this is the game they've been trying to make this entire time. Oblivion came close. Fallout 3 was much different, but I think it also came really close. But this is if there's anything I could throw at it, I guess I'd say this is Bethesda's masterpiece.
No, I think that's fair. I think this is the best executed, not just for the time. You know, this is the best they've done, and they've done pretty well before.
Yeah, like, I mean, some of the stuff in Skyrim are stuff that, like, for years people have said about games, and, you know, like urban legends about games. Like, no, seriously, if you noclip, you can find all of Oblivion in this game, and you always tell you, nah, that's bullcrap. Everything people say about this game is true. Like, if you lure a bear to a giant will hit it, and it will fucking fly really, really far. You know, that kind of stuff. Just fun, goofy, weird stuff, but also... super serious, really well executed setting.
This is kind of getting a little off topic, but with Fallout 4, which is probably going to be their next big game after they do whatever DLC they have planned for Skyrim, I think if anything, if that game is as good as Skyrim but in the Fallout universe, you know, then it'll be a great game.
Yes, so. Fallout 4 will be the best game that's ever been made.
Only if it has giants and dragons.
Just randomly thrown in there.
Steam dragons.
Yeah.
It'll have tunnel snakes.
But yeah. I mean, I think the thing about Skyrim is that it's just way ambitious. It succeeds largely on a lot of what it tries to do, but I think there are some things that hold it back there that it... no one could make something that big and not have issues crop up.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Which, you know, it's hard to fault them for that, but you know, it's also tough to give Game of the Year to something that, you know, glitches out, that messes with save files, that, you know, like there's something about that that's makes me a little wary.
Do you think of this? Do you think if we were giving a retrospective look back next year on the best game of the year based on, you know, how a game improved over the year through DLC and stuff, you think Skyrim would win that instead? If you know, all of these problems are resolved and there is great DLC on the way?
You know, I don't even know. 1 year from now, I'm not sure. Well, I know, like, if you look back at, like, the PC version of Oblivion, and, you know, looked at all the mods and things they did over, you know, 4 or 5 years... I think Skyrim's going to have those kind of legs, which that's not true about any of the other games on this list. But I think my main problem with Skyrim, despite the fact that I love that game, is it the game of the year? It's an amazingly realized world, but when I think about, you know, game design, is there that there? Is there these interactions are incidental? Is there something really crafted there that that makes it interesting to me? I don't know. Again, I mean, it's pretty good.
This all comes down to personal experience. But I mean, as much as I love Skyrim, it's one of my favorite games of the year. But I agree with you. I mean, it's a great world to explore. There's a lot of interesting things in there. But it doesn't, like, it's just as a game, as an experience, it's probably not as solid as a few other games on this list. So I mean, I love it, but I don't. Out of all the games on this list, I think it might be one of the weaker ones.
No, and I totally agree. It's hard to say bad things about these games for the most part because they're the best games of the year. But we do what we can.
But it's still, you know, still one of the best games of the year. You know, as much as I love it, it's hard to say if it's, you know, the best. But yeah.
Right.
I don't know. The only problem I have at all with Skyrim so far is the fact that PS3 owners can't enjoy it as much as I can.
That is a big problem.
There is a serious issue with the PS3 version of the game, which by virtue of it being a Bethesda game, you probably knew already.
Yeah.
So and I mean, I guess if you're a PS3 owner, you won't think it's the best game of the year. There's a good chance of that, but I mean, so I guess it comes back to your point, Graham, of a game being kind of broken. I mean, the other versions of the game, they have problems, but they're not nearly as bad. But you know, there is a version of this game that exists that is almost completely broken. So do you think that should factor in against Skyrim overall? Is that something holding it back?
There's something, I think, psychological about it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I tend to value a well-crafted experience, at the expense of ambition.
Like, this was a common thing when I played stuff like, say, Morrowind and Oblivion, and it's to some degree Fallout and New Vegas, but, I mean, Fallout 3 and New Vegas, but is there a recurring thing in Skyrim as well where you kind of just want to skip through 50% of what people are saying, or like never read any of those homes in the game because there's just too many?
I think that is a common complaint among a lot of people. I think Skyrim kind of suffers from that. I personally, for the most part, I really enjoyed hearing what all the characters had to say, but sometimes you think they might have to say too much.
Yeah.
So it might kind of drag down the experience. So I get what you're saying. I mean, I've never been someone who skipped past a lot of the dialogue, but, I can understand why a lot of people would feel that way, and I think Skyrim is kind of more of the same of that.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next game. What is it?
Next game is The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword.
Oh, I can wake up now. Okay, good.
Yeah, Chris.
Well, I've been in the middle of this last dungeon anyway, so.
So, what are your thoughts on Zelda as a Game of the Year candidate?
I don't think the fact that it saved the Wii from having its worst year ever is enough. But it's.
I think it did have its worst year ever, even with Zelda. But
probably. Yeah. Oh, most definitely did.
But I mean, Zelda in the context of the series, and I think, you know, you can appreciate it on its own. But I think when you start talking about Game of the Year, is this one of the best Zeldas ever?
No.
Yes, we know Jerry's opinion, but Chris, what do you think?
The first 5 hours are pretty baller.
That I can agree
with. I'm really liking everything that they've done to improve the series.
Yeah.
Like, the overworld is less empty, because there's less of it, granted. But I like everything the motion controls are doing with it now. I mean, the Beetle is fine, but I just fought a Stellmaster again. And that is some intense, intense motion control-oriented fighting. That's the Stealthos thing.
Some of the combat can get really, really, really intense. I mean, especially near the end. I mean, you haven't gotten to it yet, but
I'm in the final dungeon now, actually.
Okay, so well, you're a huge
mini boss rush.
You are very close to the final bosses of the game, which are great. I think those, especially the very last boss, kind of capitalize on what makes the motion control so great, and just the fact that it's just a fun fight. It's just epic, and it feels like a final battle, and I don't think we get very many of those. Like, going back to Skyrim, there's a final battle in the main story in which you fight the kind of the leader of the dragons in a way, and it's just another dragon fight, except he's a little stronger than the other dragons. So it's great that I think if there's anything that Zelda does best, it's the boss battles, and it still focuses on having strong boss battles and, you know, final encounters that really kind of challenge your skills up to that point, and, you know, once you defeat them, make you feel like, yeah, I just saved the world. And I don't think any game this year does that better than Zelda anywhere.
And as I mentioned before we started our last week's podcast, the fact that there is a game-breaking bug in the game is fairly noticeable, and it's easy to trigger it by accident, but I'm not sure how much that should actually count against it, considering how many bugs I've heard just in Skyrim in general.
Yeah, I never...
Of course, the Wii does have the issue of not being patchable.
This is true.
Well, no, there are Wii games that are patched. I think Modern Warfare 3 even has had a couple of patches since its launch. I think it's just Nintendo that doesn't do patches.
It's just the game itself that has to be released in a way that it actually has like the downloadable hooks where it allows the game to be patched.
Yeah, and I think it's just kind of Nintendo is still not, you know, up with the times regarding those things.
That said, they usually do put out largely bug-free
games. The fact that there's a bug in this at all is annoying, but rare.
Yeah. Fair enough. Anyone want to rant against Zelda? Named Jerry.
Well, I actually do agree somewhat that the first half of the game was pretty great. Like, I'll give it that. Like the whole introduction part for the game was one of the better ones, even if it was still kind of slow, slowly paced.
Not as slow as Twilight Princess, but yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah,
It
is way faster paced than Twilight Princess, where the first 3 hours of the game might as well have not happened because you don't do anything.
But I just want to clarify for me and maybe everyone else. What do you consider the first half of the game? What do you consider the second half? Like, what is the halfway point for you? Because I think this is kind of broken up into maybe thirds.
The halfway point for me is after you've visited the three major areas.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
All right, just making sure.
Yeah, like after you visit the first three major areas, then the game just takes this huge decline in quality for me. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to spoil things for a lot of people listening or for people who haven't played it, like who haven't gotten that far. But it's just the Skyward Sword does a lot of stuff that I just didn't agree with when compared to the rest of the series. Like I saw a lot of pre-release information saying how much the world was alive and, you know, you could visit everywhere in the sky, stuff like that. And the overworld in Skyward Sword is pretty much completely barren and empty. Like
I agree.
There are some Skyloftians you can see flying around, but they're completely non-interactable. You can see the whole map from the moment you first go into the sky, and there's just like three islands you can go to, two of them being for just one mini game, and the other being this tavern place.
The main island, it's such a disconnect because landing on it triggers a loading screen. Like, you can't just jump off of your bird and just land on the island.
Oh yeah, and then there's the predetermined landing spots where you can't explore. Like, I want to land here. I want to see what's in this corner.
Yeah, it's really annoying and just not like it's in this day and age. It's just not, you know, fluid. It's not not as good as Wind Waker's Overworld, which is the real problem. Wind Waker had this amazing, beautiful, living, thriving overworld where you could just go straight anywhere, and it felt entirely seamless. Like, you could just roll up anywhere you want and hop out, you know?
Yeah, and the best part about Wind Waker that I just loved about the overworld was that there was something to explore and go into and land and see in every single of the game's like map chart squares, like in every little area, like there was one island where you could go to, and then there were others like smaller things that you could see and blow up.
It's,
or something.
It's similar to Skyrim in that way. Like in Skyrim, you don't need to do a mission; you can just wander the hell around and discover stuff. Like, you could do that in Wind Waker too. I did that for hours.
Yeah, and then, I don't know. I think the overworld in Skyward Sword kind of let me down. I mean, I even had more fun exploring in Twilight Princess than I did in Skyward Sword. We're just saying a lot. But then there's like other smaller details, like how the game pretty much has no teleportation system.
Yeah.
So if you want to go from, if either, even if it's from region to region or from places in between the same region, like you have to find a statue to take you back into the sky, to get on your bird, turn the bird around, jump back down, and then pick the area you want to warp to.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in other games, you could just, you know, use the song of whatever and warp directly where you want it.
Valid.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues like that. All the content reuse, like going back to the same major areas over the overall course of the game, it's something I actually didn't expect a Zelda game to do. I can get having major events happen in the same area, like going through using your knowledge of a territory to make an event easier, stuff like that, like being familiar with a territory. But some of the stuff that Zelda does is just completely lazy. Like, with the whole sneaking segment later in the game, where it's just, a bunch of goblins just suddenly took over the place, and they took all your equipment, and after that happens, there was, like, no explanation for what happened. Like, it just...
That is my least favorite part of the game.
Here's the thing you came to look for, but why did the goblins invade this place? Why is there suddenly like a huge high security compound here? And then they just as quickly as they came, they vanish, and the whole place is back to normal. And just
that was incredibly random. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
And there's just some really inconsistent stuff over the course of the whole game that really, really hurts my appreciation for the game. Like, I'll agree that it's still one of the better Zeldas when compared to other stuff like some of the earlier titles and some of the other 3D games. But yeah, like for the things that I look forward to in a Zelda, like the dungeon design, stuff like that, the dungeons can get very creative, but they were rather simple. Like pretty much every single dungeon in the game was designed around a central hub room that you kept going back to. And I don't know. I kind of enjoyed the whole the whole venturing into these huge expansive rooms and all these puzzles and other side rooms that you went through in all the other games.
Fair enough.
I can agree with you on one. I think overall there is a little too much filler in Skyward Sword that doesn't make it feel as tight of an experience as something like Wind Waker or even something like Twilight Princess.
Yeah, but it like. I do agree. I do think that if some of the content from the game was actually cut, it would have been a better game.
Yeah, they really should have gotten rid of those Catwoman missions. those were really out of place in that game. They weren't integrated into the Zelda experience.
Well, if you buy it used, you won't have to worry about that.
So. Okay, we're good then.
And there's other issues that I would love to talk about, but I think I'm running short of time here, so I'll just wrap up and say that. I do like the game. I do think it's one of the better games this year, but game of the year, not really.
All right. What's our next candidate?
Next is Portal 2. Oh, man. I could talk about Portal 2 for the next hour, maybe
more. Did I ever tell you guys that I was one of... There's a chance that I was the first person who doesn't work for Valve to play Portal 2.
Oh, really?
We talked about that before. I was at a press event, and it was an EA press event, and we did not know Portal was going to be there. And as far as I know, no one had really played it yet. Like, it wasn't E3 or anything yet, because this was in, like, January. And I walked upstairs, because we were setting up a camera, and I was like, is that Portal? A guy was setting a thing up, and he's like, yeah, you want to play it? And it wasn't even all set up yet, and I was like, yes. And I sat down on the couch and played the first 20 or 40 minutes of Portal. And I went home and I called on my friends and made a bunch of people really jealous, and it was really fun. And what also is funny is I have not played the campaign yet.
Whoa.
Yeah, I played a bit of the co-op, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's a travesty.
You need to play You need to play more of that game.
Sure. I know, and I've been playing the co-op, and the co-op is structured really poorly, so I haven't been that pushed to like finish the co-op, but I do want to play the campaign.
It's all right. It's structured really well in the context of...
Play a session
with your buddy. It's not a seamless
problem
experience.
With it is you play for 5 minutes and then there's a really long loading screen, and then you play for 3 minutes and there's a really long loading screen, and then you play for 2 to 5 minutes and there's a long loading screen, and it breaks it up really a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, I can see what they're going for, where they want it to be quick and snappy and you can just play a few rounds with your buddy. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I'm spending a lot more time in elevators than I am, like, watching that cool animation of them taking apart the robots and putting them back together than I am actually doing puzzles.
And in the beginning, it's kind of like that, but I mean, I think a lot of the later puzzles get really tough, and I think you'll spend more than just 5 minutes doing a puzzle.
All right.
I mean, I don't know. Absolutely. I never had a problem with the loading times myself.
I believe that.
So I can speak in support of Portal 2.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to the other games in this list, I will say it is much smaller in scope than those games, at least what it tries to accomplish in a world or anything like that. But what it does phenomenally well. The puzzles are, I mean, I just love how they're put together. They're interesting. They're not, it's not Portal the Lost Levels, you know. It's not, let's make something that's really tough for people who've beaten the first Portal. This is a separate thing. And it's not necessarily, I liked how they didn't rely too much on, you know, having like crazy reflex time for the puzzles. It was really, really interesting to sit back and think about, all right, what do I do here? It takes a lot of great game design to come up with those and have them be just as compelling as ones where you have to click really fast.
I am slightly disappointed that some of the pre-release, like, trailer puzzles didn't make it into the game.
There's a lot of support from the community for that kind of thing.
It's something that I do miss. Like, I was really looking forward to doing those segments, but it's not a big thing that'll hamper that affects me, because I really like the game.
Yeah, but I mean, then the two things that really make this game for me are the pacing, and the writing.
Writing is phenomenal.
It's hard to make a full retail product out of a game, you know, a sequel to a game that was kind of small. But they managed to do it by breaking up these segments that are, you know, puzzle thinky with just like really quick action scenes that aren't that complicated. They aren't
basically
really
like the end
puzzles,
of like the end of Portal 1. A lot of those sections,
right?
And
except for they use it to break up the, you know, the experience, but they don't. There's not too many of them to the point where you hate them, and
yeah,
they,
only like three
they
or four.
Usually bring up story, and they have a lot of the writing that we're talking about. That just it makes it a lot of fun, and it breaks up these segments. And rather than just here's a new element to the puzzle, the way they introduced a lot of the elements into the story and had them, you know, have these thematic elements around them. I don't want to spoil the game because, you know, I want you to play it. And that's part of the magic. But if you haven't played it at this point, I'm still kind of mad at you.
Shame on you.
Yeah. The voice acting's great in that. I mean, just considering what that game was, that game was like a physics puzzle game. Like, how was it that compelling? Like, it's not just thinky like the original. The original had some interesting writing, but it was a lot about, like, just figuring out the puzzles. But, like, Portal 2 made me, more than the first one, really love that world and how it was put together. And I just... tries to do, it does really well.
It made Portal 1 feel like a tech demo in comparison. Like, Portal 1 is a great game. It's a game that people will look upon fondly many years from now. But I think Portal 2, just everything that game does 10 times better and wraps it in a story that is very, very surprisingly deep and complex. Like, there's a lot of little twists and turns that you never expect. And if you blink, you might miss them. But they're there, and they fit in really well with this universe. After Portal 1, I said to myself, you know, yeah, I could play a little more of that, but I mean, it wasn't, you know, I feel like I'm done with that experience. So when Portal 2 was announced, I was a little not as happy about it as some people were, but then I played it, and it's like, after playing Portal 2, I'm like, I want more of this. I want Portal 3 now, or Portal 2.5, Portal 2 Episode 1, whatever, I want it.
Yeah.
So the total opposite of Batman, then.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, sure.
I mean, that game, like, what it does better than every other game on this list, I think. There are things it doesn't try to do. It doesn't try to have a big scope with, you know, like a living world and characters. It doesn't try that. And as such, it doesn't, I mean, you know, it doesn't do that to. As better as, you know, it doesn't do that better than Skyrim. It doesn't do, you know, the art style is, I mean, there's not much there that you can really talk about. There are a lot of interesting things they do within the constraints of what they try, but
it's still a gorgeous not, like, game.
Right. But, you know, there's just, oh gosh,
let,
that
let
game.
Let me just say one more thing. The final moments of that game.
Yeah.
Are just astounding. It's just amazing. And you they're hinted at in such a clever way, like such a casual, clever way. They're kind of just thrown out there. And then, right. And then it actually, something like that actually happens.
Yeah.
And it's just, you just, you can't believe it's happening. And then, loved it.
Yeah. I believe one of the achievement descriptions was that just happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Because that just happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyone want to tear down the beloved Portal 2?
Anyone want to be wrong?
Explain why it should not get Game of the Year.
Nope.
Because there's no point where you use the four portals in a cool, different way, I think.
That's not true.
Is it not true?
Yeah, right. Completed that. I guess not. I'll admit that the single player experience is better crafted than the co-op, though I just like co-op, and there it's still interesting. But I'll admit that it doesn't really push as much.
I actually got more from the co-op than I originally expected. Like I pretty much expected the co-op to just be like all puzzles, no plot, like barely any writing. And there's actually some good writing in the co-op dialogue as well.
Yeah, there's definitely some good dialogue there. There's not much in the way of story, but. I do like a lot of the writing for that.
I mean, it's not, you're not going to play Portal 2 for the co-op. You're going to play it for the single player, and the co-op is a nice extra. I don't think, again, it doesn't stand out as well as the single player campaign does, but it's there, and it's you know, for what it is, it's pretty well done, and it's a fun 4 to 5 hour experience, and you know,
right.
I have not played that DLC yet. I have it downloaded since it came out, but I still haven't played that.
I'll admit, I certainly wouldn't mind if Portal 3 came out and had a co-op campaign just as good as the single player.
Oh yeah, I love that.
I wouldn't mind if Portal 3 came out and had a co-op as good as this. I mean, you know, it's not the best part of that game, but it's still a pretty good part of that game.
I think if there is a Portal 3 and there's a co-op campaign, I think Portal 2's co-op campaign will be what Portal 1's story was to Portal 2. You know, it's kind of them experimenting with things, but the next game will kind of be them fully embracing it in a way. So,
yeah.
So
all right.
co-op single player. the co-op main campaign.
That could be interesting. All right, next game.
Next up, we have Radiant Historia, which is
right. Let me pause Zelda here so I can talk about it.
this is probably the odd duck of the group, but if people
don't
like it,
this may be the one people might be surprised to find on our list.
My only problem with this being on the list is I don't even think it was the best DS game this year.
Fair enough.
That's my personal list, but other than that, I loved everything about this game. I loved the choose your own adventure, alternate timeline, time travel story to it. I thought it had one of the most impressive and original battle systems I've ever seen in an RPG, and the characters are all really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think the great thing about this game is that it's a JRPG, and that genre is really tired. But this game, I mean, it does enough different to where it's fun again, and without going so far as to say it's not a JRPG anymore, it's definitely that. But there's something about that game you should experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing I really kind of iffy about Radiant Historia is the main story pacing. Like the game can drag a bit if you don't know specific locations for where to go. But other than that, the rest of the game is just amazing.
Yeah, and I think it does some interesting things with the art style, which is important at this point in the DS's lifespan. That you know it has to try something different. It tries that. I don't know how to describe it. It goes for kind of a muted color palette, and I don't know. There's something about that art style that really works. I don't know, the idea that you'd go back and redo situations to try to get them right.
One of the things really that I do really like about the game is that for some reason I'm a fan of like bad endings in video games.
Some really like really good bad endings.
Like going back to say Chrono Trigger, like the bad the bad ending you get for fighting Lavos on the day of Lavos, and the future refused to change. That is what like my favorite bad ending in any video game. And just Raiden Historia having like a bunch of bad endings for failing key decisions, like picking the wrong thing, just showing you what happened because you did this one thing wrong. Just I really like it.
Yeah, I having not played the game, I just want to say that I really like the kind of branching paths that games like that and Chrono Trigger take with their story, and how you can mess up and the game just won't just get a game over screen. You'll get a screen showing you why you failed and how everyone's lives are miserable because of it. And
yeah, you screwed up, now the world's dead. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. And
it is all your fault, and here is how it is all your fault.
Just how ridiculous some of the bad endings happen for your choices. Like, I don't know, you decided not to give this little girl a page out of a book, and suddenly the world exploded.
It's like, now there's no happiness in the world. Thanks a lot.
But it's great because, like, as opposed to a game over screen, like when you see a bad ending, it just makes you want to play the game more. Like, oh, I want to fix that mistake. I know what I did wrong now. You know, when you get a game over screen, you're just like, oh, well, I guess I can go do something else now. I don't know if I should try that again.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing that you really don't talk about with DS games, but that game's soundtrack was...
I am so happy that game included the 5 piano tracks.
Yeah. It's a great soundtrack in a way that DS soundtracks usually aren't. It's well composed music.
Yeah, the same composer did the Kingdom Hearts things too, I think.
Right, Shimomura. Yeah.
She does great stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's interesting to see that. And you know, this was a really good year for high quality portable games. And we should mention, though they didn't make our finalists, there were some ones that came pretty close. Ghost Trick Phantom Detective,
which I did have as my best DS game of the year.
Me too.
Pokemon Black and White, and The Legend of Heroes Trails in the Sky. All very, very good games coming at the end of systems' lives, and they really should get more attention than they did, and you should play all of them.
Definitely a good year for RPG fans, I'd say.
Yeah. Really good year.
And for adventure people. Not just Ghost Trick, but you got L.A. Noire.
Gemini Rue.
Yeah, Gemini Rue.
Corpse Party.
Technically Corpse Party. Probably technically To the Moon.
Yeah.
I would say technically Uncharted 3.
Oh.
Sure.
Very, very scripted and story based.
Yeah. But yeah, so there have been a lot of games there, but the Raiding Historia managed to come out on top, and it's deserving of a spot here. And I think it's important to realize that there can be games that aren't necessarily AAA titles that can be in these conversations.
Will it win our award?
Probably not,
but
you will find out next week.
But it's good to see it on the list, nonetheless. Right. I think.
Right. All right. But yeah, so we have one more game, right?
We have one more game, and that game is, surprise of all surprises, To the Moon. Let's talk about To the Moon, guys.
I'm installing it right now, you guys.
No, seriously, it's Uncharted 3.
Hey, I like Uncharted.
So I think we should let Matt talk about this one.
Yes.
Uncharted 3, everything everyone else says about Uncharted 3... is bullcrap. Listen to me. It is more Uncharted 2, but it is like it's bigger. It's better. It's what they did. What they did with the sequel was they took Uncharted 2 and just made it bigger and more exciting. And I don't know why people have a problem with that because I freaking loved it. I thought it. Yeah. I'm sure it didn't. I didn't enjoy as much as Uncharted 2 because yes, it wasn't as shocking and groundbreaking, but it was a freaking taught, well executed experience.
I think a lot of people who have the problem with Uncharted 3 kind of have the similar complaints with Arkham City. It's like Uncharted 2 was their first, so why should Uncharted 3 get all this great attention because it's still a great game. That's why.
Yeah, Uncharted 2 was, you know, Game of the Year nominee then. Yeah, I mean, they made another one of those. I mean, that's the same with Batman this year. Last year, you had Super Mario Galaxy 2, which was a lot of that. You know, following a formula isn't so bad if you hit a formula that worked.
Yeah,
see, Super Mario Galaxy 2 felt to me like they did less than the first game did. Uncharted does not feel that way to me.
Okay. Anybody want to slam Uncharted's aiming and talk about how they didn't do much?
They fixed it real fast, all right? They should get more points for how quickly they fixed it, I think.
They
actually invited like fans that had complained about the game to help them fix it. Like,
yeah,
out as to what their issue was, like fly them right, well, have them drive over to their studios and help them fix the issue.
Yeah, they handled it better than anyone's handled something like that in recent years. I mean, with
so
the
you're
way
saying that's a best patch of 2012 nominee. Who are the other nominees?
Best patch, best patch, and best Nolan North, voice of the year. I'd have Sega Ghost Uncharted.
Penguin.
No, maybe Penguin, but
Penguin or I already forgot it. But there's another one.
I didn't feel for Penguin like I felt for
Random Grunt number 3.
Yes. No, but there's a really great Nolan North performance that's not Uncharted or the Penguin. I know it's not really saying much.
You're right. I know what you're thinking of too, and I can't think of it either. Like he's in Old Republic. Is that what you're thinking of?
That's not it. Okay.
Remember when he was Prince of Persia for like a week?
Portal 2.
Oh yeah, there you go. Portal 2.
He was the motion course.
Yeah, and also the defective turret.
Yeah,
and defective.
Defective turret may be best supporting character of the year.
Oh yeah,
love defective turret.
I sat there for about 15 minutes just listening to the defective turrets talk to each other.
They're great.
That's another thing about Uncharted. It's like every single character in that game rules. I loved every character in Uncharted 3. Like
defective turret was really good in Uncharted 3 too.
There wasn't a single. He was the main character.
Yep.
There wasn't a single character in Uncharted 3 I would not play a whole game about, and I mean that. I'll play a game about the old British lady. I'll do it. Like I wanted to know more about everybody in that game.
Well, if I'm going to say why I don't think this game is Game of the Year material, I mean, it's Game of the Year nominee material, definitely. It definitely deserves to be on this list, but...
I'm probably on that side, too, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, that's
really... I'm not going to say it doesn't deserve to be Game of the Year, but it might not be my Game of the Year.
Oh, yeah. I understand. I mean, but out of everything on this list, I think... I don't know. Uncharted 3 has a great story, has great characters, but a lot of the... These side characters just kind of feel like they're there just to be there. Like Chloe and Elena don't really feel. I feel like they didn't have as much of a purpose this time around. And they introduced Charlie, who was awesome. But I mean, his purpose was to, well, without spoilers, he had a kind of interesting purpose to introduce something that shows up a lot later on in the game.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Aside from that, like
he totally disappears. His story kind of goes nowhere.
Yeah, I think I have that issue with a lot of games. If they're trying to end a series, and the same thing with actually movies or shows or any sort of fiction. With the ending installment, why are you introducing new characters?
To be fair, though, I mean, this is the first two games were about Nathan Drake because he was the main character. But this is the first game that really felt like it was about Nathan Drake. It felt like this was really his story and kind of exploring his character as well as his relationship with Sully, who is my favorite character in the series, probably. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to see him, you know, in more of this game, because in Uncharted 2, he was barely there, I felt. So it made me happy that he was a major role in this game. But, I mean, a lot of the other characters just feel like you can still make this about Drake and kind of, you know, conflicts with his character and also have these characters have more of a purpose than just showing up just to be there, just to show that, hey, we're still around and we still help Drake out, you know? And
yeah,
villains, like, their plan, I mean, until the very end, you don't understand what they're doing or why they're doing it. Like, even with, like, characters like, who, I don't remember the main bad guy from Uncharted 2, but, like, you understood. Yeah, Lazarevich. You understood, you know, he was the big bad guy, and you understood why he was doing it. I mean, these are good villains, but they just kind of felt like they were pushed to the side, and even at the end, I kind of didn't understand you know, what they were doing exactly. Like, I didn't get their motivation at all.
Yeah, that is definitely true, and I thought the same thing, because it was like, all we really knew about her was that she dated Sully at some point. And the other guy we don't know his relationship or her relationship with the other guy. I did definitely want to know more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I still
for some reason was really into all of them. Like the guy that looked at Dimitri Martin, I can't remember his name. And also the way they explained the supernatural stuff, I thought was better than the other two games.
Oh yeah.
Because it wasn't just a Scooby-Doo plot. It wasn't just old man Withers in a mask. So some stuff was better and some stuff, yeah, wasn't as good. But as far as the characters I needed to care about, I thought they did great. Like, you know, Drake and Sully specifically. But also Elena. I thought Elena's story went in a cool way.
I did enjoy your blog or not blog post, but your feature on Elena's character.
Thank you. Yes, that's one of the that's probably why I liked it so much, because I saw it in my crazy, weird, messed up head. It was in that way, like, instead of probably the way Naughty Dog wrote it. But like, yeah, it's something like
sense.
And that's the way I feel about a lot of stories. Like, I can, like, any time a character is put in a situation and people complain about, you know, us not knowing stuff, like, anytime I'm feeling what the character feels that I'm supposed to be identifying with, it usually lets me forgive a lot. Like, Drake didn't know who those people were, so I didn't really care, honestly. Like, because all I cared about was getting that ring back, you know, mm-hmm. and saving Elena and saving Sully, and I cared about what Drake was doing, and I cared about him, you know, going through all that. And I mentioned in the review as well, like this, you know, Uncharted is a series where constantly Drake puts his friends in danger for his own personal gain, and nothing bad happens because of it, except his friends get almost killed by pirates or kidnapped or whatever. And in this game, he takes a lot of shit for it, and I liked that about it. Like, I liked how Drake went through this. Like, it almost, in some ways, felt like a 70s, like a Taxi Driver or one of those kind of movies where it's like just this lone guy who just gets shit on for 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like that in a video game, and you don't get that in video games. Video games are about the Marcus Fenix having muscles, and that's what games are about. And this game did not do that. This game, I felt like it was a very human story, but in a video game context, it was a human story where a giant boat flips over and you run on the side of it while it flips over, you know, and that kind of, and that's what I enjoyed about it, was that it may not have done a lot new through the gameplay, but it still felt like it did a lot that I either haven't seen ever or in a very long time.
I mean, I just want to say one more thing.
All right.
Not to compare it too much to Uncharted 2, but I mean, Uncharted 2, I felt handled the balance between puzzles, like climbing mechanics and shooting a lot better than Uncharted 3 does. I feel like the last parts of Uncharted 3 are way too shooter heavy, and the shooter mechanics just aren't. I mean, they're okay, but they aren't amazing. And the hand-to-hands, I found myself relying more on the hand-to-hand combat than shooting in a lot of instances, which is great. But, you know, there are instances where I'm fighting some guy, and there's someone who should be shooting at me, but is just kind of standing there watching us fight. Like, he's putting his gun away and then bringing out a bucket of popcorn. He's like, oh, I want to see how this plays out. And, of course, as soon as the fight is over, he'll pull out his gun and start shooting at me right away. And things like that kind of break the experience for me. And just, like, There are moments where you can almost literally see guys popping into the area just to reach, like, spawning enemies at some point. Like, there's too many of them. They just kind of come out of nowhere. And I feel like the very last parts of the game kind of drag for me because they rely too much on a mechanic that is fine in spurts, but just it doesn't hold up. If the Uncharted series was, like, one long shooter franchise with some decent story, it wouldn't have be getting the love it gets. And I think Uncharted 3 kind of moves more towards the shooting than the first two did. So, I mean, that
it did,
that,
and also in a poorer way as well. Like, the scenarios were not very well thought out for most of the game. The shooting, as you guys mentioned, is not very good. And this, like, Uncharted, it always, before, like, his 1 and 2, the shooting is pretty much the same. The only thing that changed really were the enemies and the way they were affected by your shooting, but it was always really good at covering that up with crazy action set pieces. But in Uncharted 3...
There's some of that in Uncharted 3, but it's not... There's not, like... Some of them either aren't as
oppressive...
It's
not as much of a balance.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because they're still amazing set pieces. There's some of the best set... I would say that game has two or three of the best set pieces ever played in a video game. But it's bogged down by sitting in the desert and like, and you know, when you're shooting, you would do, I would do these, you know, segments over and over again and never feel like I learned anything from each time I would die. Yeah. It was just me having to do it better and faster every time, but still have to do pretty much the same thing. Like, it didn't matter who I killed first because they would always flank me like crazy.
Which is crazy considering how everything else, like, if you climb, if you're doing climbing and you fall, you know, like, oh, that's why I messed that up. But if you're shooting and a guy just sneaks up on you and shoots you a few times in the back of the head and you really, hey, you're powerless to do it because you're shooting the 12 other guys that were in front of you.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, well, I just happened to have to move to a different cover spot and take out this one guy I should have known was coming but didn't, you know?
Yeah, a guy can sneak up with a shotgun and just fucking blow your face off.
But, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, we could keep talking about Uncharted for a long time.
Just a quick comment here, though. Matt, right. Andrew, then for all your complaining, then you just wait. Uncharted will be the best game ever made.
God, I want it so bad. I want to know how to climb in a cart. I want to know how that works.
That's the biggest disappointment about the Last of Us announcement. That means that Naughty Dog is not working on Uncharted, at least not as their main project.
Yeah.
There
were some spin-offs of...
All right.
Of those games at the time.
All right, guys. That should do it. We will announce the winner on Monday. You guys should check out the site to find out which of these games was voted by the full staff as Snackbar Games Game of the Year 2011. Next time you hear us, it will be 2012, and we will be talking about who knows what, but...
Final Fantasy.
The end of the world.
Right, yes. Forgot about that.
The final end of the world?
Oh, yes. We had 12 months to talk about that.
Correct.
Also, you guys, Saints Row is real good. I just want more people to play that.
That is our seventh finalist, Saints Row.
Yeah, I don't think enough people are playing that game. That game's real good.
I just finished it. It's amazing.
So, yeah, okay. All right, guys. But yeah, so we'll see you next time. For Chris, Matt, Jerry, Sean, Andrew, and Graham. Later.
Thanks for listening to the Snack Bar Games Podcast. Follow us on the web at snackbar-games.com or on Twitter @snackbargames.